below. Whatever was in there could only make her head more spinning, and was certain to remind her of David and the smoke and everything she'd left behind. It felt as if every time she took a step forward into her new life, something sucked her back toward ugly days. With her mind tangled by these questions, Tally put her foot wrong. The sole of one shoe slipped from a thick cable coated in slick plastic, sending her flailing legs away from the tower, yanking her hands from their grip on a strut that was still wet with dew. Tally tumbled downward, the feeling of free-falling surging through her body, familiar from all the times she had wiped out on a hoverboard or thrown herself from the top of a building. Her instincts told her to relax until she realized the big difference between this fall and all those others. Tally wasn't wearing crash bracelets or a bungee jacket. This time, she was really falling. Nothing was going to catch her. Her brand new pretty reflexes kicked into gear, and her hands flew out to grab a passing braid of cable. Tally's palm slid down the plastic insulation, the friction burning her skin as if the cable had burst into flame. Her legs swung in toward the tower, knees bent, body turning, and Tally absorbed the impact against the metal with her hip, a blow that shook her whole frame but didn't loosen the grip of her burning fingers. Tally's feet scrabbled to gain purchase, their soles finding a wide strut and mercifully taking most of the weight from her hands. She wrapped her arms around the cable, every muscle tense, barely hearing Zane's shouts above her, and gazed out over the river, amazed at her own vision. Everything shone, as if diamonds had been scattered across Uglyville. Her mind felt clean, like the air after a morning rain, and Tally understood at last why she had climbed up here. Not to impress Zane or the Smokies or to pass any test, but because some part of her had wanted this moment, this clarity she hadn't felt since the operation. This was way beyond bubbly. "Are you okay?" came a distant cry. She looked back up at Zane. Seeing how far she'd fallen, Tally swallowed, but still managed to smile. "I'm bubbly. Totally. Wait up." She climbed fast now, ignoring her bruised hip. Her scorched palms complained every time they closed around a handhold, but within a minute, she was alongside Zane again. His golden eyes were wider than ever, as if her fall had scared him worse than it had Tally. She smiled again, realizing that it probably had. "Come on." She left him behind, pulling herself up the last few meters. Reaching the top, Tally found a black magnet stuck to the bottom of the flagpole, a shiny new key clinging to it. She carefully pulled the key off and slipped it into her pocket while the Valentino flag snapped overhead, the sound as crisp as clothes fresh out of the wall. "Got it," she yelled and started down, passing Zane before he'd even moved, the shocked expression still frozen on his face. It wasn't until she stood on the roof again that Tally realized how sore her muscles were. Her heart was still pounding, and the world remained crystalline. She pulled the key from her pocket, tracing its teeth with one trembling fingertip, her senses registering every detail of the metal's jagged edge. "Hurry up," she cried to Zane, who was still only halfway down. He started to climb faster, but Tally snorted and spun on one heel, striding toward the shack. The padlock popped open when she turned the key, the rusty door groaning with age as its bottom edge skidded across the stone. Tally stepped inside, blind for a moment in the darkness, seeing red traces that pulsed with her heartbeat, full of excitement. If the Smokies had arranged all this to make her bubbly, they'd gotten what they wanted. The little room smelled very old, the air inside warm and still. As Tally's eyes adjusted, she could see the flaking graffiti that filled every centimeter of wall space, layer upon layer of slogans, scrawled tags, and the name of couples proclaiming their love. Some of the dates included years that made no sense, until Tally realized that they were written in rusty style, counting all the old centuries before the collapse. The crumbling elevator machinery was decorated with still more graffiti, and the floor littered with ancient contraband. Old cans of spray paint, crushed and empty tubes of notoriously sticky nano glue, burned out fireworks smelling like old campfires. Tally saw a yellowed piece of paper, squashed and blackened at one end, like a picture of a cigarette from a rusty history book. She picked it up and sniffed, dropping it when her stomach heaved at the stench. A cigarette? This place was older than lifters. She reminded herself, maybe even older than the city itself. A strange, forgotten piece of history. She wondered how many generations of uglies and tricky new pretties like the Crims had made it theirs. The pouch Croy had shown her rested on one of the old rusted gears of the elevator mechanism, waiting. Tally picked it up. The old leather felt strange in her hands, sending her mind back to the worn textures of the smoke. She opened it and pulled out a sheet of paper. A small skittering sound came from the stone floor, and she realized something tiny had fallen from the pouch. Two things, in fact. Tally knelt down and squinted, feeling the cool stone with her still burning palms until she found two little white pills. She stared at them, feeling a memory at the edge of her awareness. The room darkened, and she looked up. Zane was in the doorway, panting, his eyes flashing in the gloom.
Gee, thanks for waiting, Tally.
She didn't say anything. He took a step in and knelt beside her.
You okay?
His hand came to rest on her shoulder.
Didn't hit your head in that fall, did you?
No. Just cleared it up. I found this. She handed the sheet of paper to Zane, who smoothed it out and held it up to the light streaming through the door. It was covered with an almost unreadable scrawl. Tally looked down again at the pills in her hand. Tiny and white, they looked like a pair of purgers. But Tally was pretty sure they would do more than burn calories. She remembered something. Zane slowly lowered the sheet of paper, his eyes wide.
It's a letter, and it's addressed to you.
A letter? Who from?
You, Tally.
His voice echoed softly from the metal walls of the shack.
It's from you.
Note to self. Dear Tally, you're me. Or I guess another way to say it is, I'm you, Tally Youngblood. Same person. But if you're reading this letter, then we're also two different people. At least, that's what us new Smokies are guessing has happened by now. You've been changed. That's why I'm writing to you. I wonder if you remember writing these words. Actually, I'm telling Shay to write them. She did handwriting in school. Do they seem like a diary entry from back when you were a littlie? Or like someone else's diary altogether? If you can't remember writing this letter at all, then we're both in big trouble. Especially me. Because not being remembered by myself would mean that the me who wrote this letter has been erased somehow. Ouch. And maybe that means I'm dead. Sort of. So please, try to remember, at least. Tally paused and traced the scrawled words with one finger, trying to remember dictating them. Shay liked to demonstrate how they could make letters with a stylus. One of the tricks she'd learned in preparation for their trip to the smoke. She had left a note for Tally, telling her how to follow her there. But was this really Shay's handwriting? More important, were the words true? Tally really couldn't remember. She took a deep breath and kept on reading. But anyway, here's what I'm trying to tell you. They did something to your brain. Our brain. And that's why this letter may seem kind of weird to you. We, that's we as in us out in the new smoke, not we as in you and me, don't know exactly how it works, but we're pretty sure that something happens to everyone who has the operation. When they make you pretty, they also add these lesions,
tiny scars, sort of, to your brain. It makes you different, and not in a good way. Look in the mirror, Tally. If you're pretty, you've got them. Tally heard a sharp intake of breath next to her ear. She turned to find Zane reading over her shoulder.
"Looks like you may be right about us pretties," she said.
He nodded slowly.
"Yeah, great."
He pointed at the next paragraph.
"But how about that?"
She dropped her eyes to the page again. "The good news is, there's a cure. That's why David came and got you, to give you the pills that will fix your brain. I really hope you remember David. He's a good guy, even if he had to kidnap you to get you here. Trust him. It might be scary to be out here, away from the city, wherever the new Smokies are hiding you. But the people who gave you the lesions will be looking, and you have to be kept safe until you're cured."
Tally stopped reading.
"Kidnapped me?" "Looks like there's been a change of plan since you wrote this," Zane said.
Tally felt funny for a moment, the image of David now stronger in her head.
"If I wrote this, and if it's true. Anyway, Croy came to see me, not David."
As she said his name, memory surged through Tally. David's hands roughened from years of work, his jacket made from sewn-together skins, the white scar that went through his eyebrow. A feeling like panic began to well up in her.
"What happened to David, Zane? Why didn't he come?"
He shook his head. "I don't know. Were you and he..."
Tally looked down at the letter again. It blurred before her, and a single teardrop fell onto the paper. Ink bled into the spattered mark, turning the tear black.
"I'm pretty sure we were."
Her voice was rough, memories tangled inside her. "But something happened."
"Oh?"
"I don't know what."
Tally wondered why she couldn't remember. Was it really because of lesions, the scars on her brain that the note had warned about? Or did she simply not want to?
"What's that in your hand, Tally?" Zane asked.
She opened her reddened palm to reveal the tiny white pills resting there.
"The cure. Let me finish this."
She took a steadying breath. "One more thing. Maddie, David's mom, who came up with the cure, says I have to add this. Something about informed consent. I, Tally Youngblood, hereby give my permission for Maddie and David to give me the pills that cure being pretty-minded. I realize this is a test on an unproven drug, and it all might go horribly wrong. Brain-dead wrong.
Sorry about that last part. That's the risk we have to take. That's why I gave myself up to become pretty, so we could test the pills and save Shay and Paris, and everyone else in the world who's had their brain messed with. So you have to take them. For me. Sorry in advance if you don't want to, and David and Maddie force you to. You'll be better off, I promise. Good luck. Love, Tally."
Tally let the paper fall onto her lap. Somehow the scrawled words had sucked the clarity out of the world, making her head spinning and fuzzy again. Her heart was still pounding, but not in that beautiful way it had when she'd caught herself falling from the tower. It felt more like panic, as if she were locked inside the little metal shack. Zane let out a low whistle.
"So that's why you came back.
You believe this, don't you?"
His eyes flashed gold in the darkness. "Of course, it all makes sense now. Why you can't remember David or coming back to the city. Why Shay has so many mixed up stories about those days. Why the new Smokies are so interested in you."
"Because I'm brain damaged?"
Zane shook his head.
"We're all brain damaged, Tally. Just like I thought. But you gave yourself up on purpose, knowing there's a cure."
He pointed at the pills in her hand.
"Those are the reason why you're here."
She stared down at the pills, which looked small and insignificant in the gloom of the shack. But the letter said they might not even work. I might wind up brain dead. He took her wrist lightly.
If you don't want to take them, Tally, I will.
She closed her hand. I can't let you do that.
But this is what I've been waiting for, a way to escape prettiness, to be bubbly all the time.
I wasn't waiting for this, Tally cried. I didn't want anything but to be a crim.
He pointed at the letter.
Yes, you did.
That wasn't me. She says so herself.
But you...
Maybe I changed my mind.
You didn't change your mind. The operation did.
She opened her mouth, but nothing came out.
Tally, you gave yourself up, knowing you'd have to risk the cure. That's amazingly brave.
Zane reached out and touched her face, his eyes shining in the shaft of sunlight that streamed across him.
But if you don't want to, let me take the risk for you.
Tally shook her head, wondering what she was more afraid of, the pills going wrong on her, or watching Zane turn into a vegetable in her place. Or maybe what she really feared was finding out what had happened to David. If only Croy had left her alone, or she'd never found Valentino 317. If she could just forget the pills and stay dumb and pretty, none of this would ever worry her again.
I just want to forget David.
Why? Zane leaned closer. What did he do to you?
Nothing. He didn't do anything. But why did Croy leave these pills for me instead of him coming back and taking me away? What if he's...
The shack shuddered for a moment, silencing her. They both looked up. Something big had passed overhead.
A hover car,
Tally whispered. Probably just flying over. As far as they know, we're in the pleasure garden.
Unless someone saw us up on the...
She fell silent as a cloud of dust stirred in through the half-open door, glowing in the shaft of sunlight. It's landing.
They know we're here, Zane said, and started tearing up the letter.
What are you doing?
We can't let them find this, he said. They can't know there's a cure.
He stuffed a piece of the letter into his mouth, grimacing at the taste. She looked at the pills in her hand.
What about these?
He swallowed the paper with a tortured expression.
I have to take them, now.
He bit off another piece of the letter and started chewing.
They're so small, she said. We could hide them.
He shook his head, swallowing again.
Getting caught without rings is pretty obvious, Tally. They'll want to know what we were up to. When you get some food in you, you won't be as bubbly and you might chicken out and hand over the pills.
The sound of footsteps approached across the roof outside. Zane yanked the door almost shut, pulling the ends of the chain through to the inside and snapping the padlock closed, plunging them into darkness.
That won't stop them for long. Give me the pills. If they work, I promise I'll make sure you...
A voice called from outside, and something cold crawled down Tally's spine. The voice had an edge, like razors in her ears. They weren't wardens outside. This was a special circumstance. In the gloom of the shack, the pills stared up at her like two soulless white eyes. Tally was somehow certain that the words in the letter were her own, begging her to take them. Maybe when she did, everything would be clear and bubbly all the time, like Zane said. Or maybe they wouldn't work and would leave her a hollow, brain-dead shell. Or maybe it was David who was dead. Tally wondered if after today, part of her would always remember his face, no matter what she did. And unless she took the pills, she would never know the truth. Tally started to bring them to her mouth, but found she couldn't. She imagined her brain unraveling, being erased, like the other Tally who had written the letter. She looked into Zane's pleading, beautiful eyes. He had no doubts, at least.
Maybe she didn't have to do this alone.
The door made a sharp screech as someone tried to pull it open, snapping the chain taut. A blow landed on the door, the sound booming like fireworks in that little metal shack. Specials were strong, but could they beat down a metal door?
"Now, Tally," Zane whispered.
"I can't."
"Then give them to me." She shook her head and leaned closer, whispering to stay unheard under the thundering blows against the door.
"I can't do that to you, Zane, and I can't do this alone. Maybe if we each took one."
"What? That's crazy. We don't know how that will..."
"We don't know anything, Zane."
The pounding stopped, and Tally shushed his reply. Specials weren't just strong and fast. They had the sharp hearing of predators. Suddenly, a bright light sparked through the gap in the door, throwing wildly jittering shadows into the shack, leaving tracers on Tally's vision. The cutting tool hissed as it burned into the chain, and the smell of molten metal reached her nostrils. The specials would be inside in seconds.
"Together," she whispered, handing one of the pills to Zane.
With a deep breath, she placed the other on her tongue. Bitterness exploded through her mouth, like biting into a seed inside a grape. She swallowed the pill, which trailed an acid taste down her throat.
"Please," she pleaded softly, "do this with me."
He sighed and took the pill, grimacing at the taste. He stared at her, shaking his head.
"That may have been very stupid, Tally."
She tried to smile.
"At least we're stupid together."
Leaning forward, she grasped the back of his neck and kissed him. David hadn't come to rescue her. He was either dead, or he must not care what happened to her. He was ugly, and Zane was beautiful, and bubbly, and he was here.
"We need each other now," she said.
They were still kissing when the specials burst in. Part 2. The Cure. "And kisses are a better fate than wisdom." E.E. Cummings. "Since feeling is first." Breakthrough. Overnight, the first freeze of winter had come. The trees shone like glass, bare branches alight with icicles. Glittering black fingers stretched across the window, cutting the sky into sharp little pieces. Tally pressed one hand against the pane, letting the chill leak through the glass and into her palm. The bracing cold made the afternoon light sharper, as brittle as she imagined the icicles outside to be. It focused the part of her mind that still wanted to sink back into pretty dreams. When she finally pulled her hand away from the window, a fuzzy outline showed its imprint on the glass, then slowly faded. "Blurry Tally is no more," she said, then grinned, placing her icy palm against Zane's cheek.
"What the?"
he muttered, stirring just enough to nudge her hand away.
"Wake up, pretty head."
His eyes opened a slit.
"Make it dark," he told his interface cuff.
The room obeyed, opaquing the window. Tally frowned.
"Another headache?"
Zane still sometimes got crippling migraines that could put him out for hours, but they weren't as bad as the first weeks after he had taken the pill.
"No," he murmured. "Sleepy."
She reached for the manual controls, setting the window back to transparent. "Then it's time to get up. We'll be late for ice skating." He squinted at her through one eye.
"Ice skating is bogus."
"Sleeping's bogus. Get up and be bubbly."
"Bubbly is bogus."
Tally raised one eyebrow, which didn't hurt anymore. She'd been a good pretty and had her forehead all fixed, though she'd memorialized the scar with a flash tattoo, black Celtic swirls just above her eye that spun in time with her heartbeat. For good measure, she'd got an eye surge exactly like Shay's, backward running clocks and everything. "Bubbly is not bogus, lazy face." Tally placed her hand against the window again to recharge its iciness, Her interface cuffs sparkled in the sun like the frozen trees below. And for the millionth time, she searched for any seam in its metal surface. But the cuff seemed to have been forged from one piece of steel, fitted perfectly to the oval of her wrist. She pulled at it softly, feeling the slightest give she was growing skinnier every day.
"Coffee, please," she said sweetly to the cuff.
Brewing smells began to percolate in the room, and Zane stirred again. When her hand had grown sufficiently cold, Tally placed it on his bare chest. He flinched, but didn't fight back, just squeezed two fistfuls of sheet and took a shuddering breath. His eyes opened, their gold irises shining like the cold winter sun.
Now that was bubbly.
"I thought bubbly was bogus." He smiled and shrugged drowsily. Tally smiled back. Zane was extra beautiful when he first woke up. The edges of sleep softened his intense stare, leaving his severe features almost vulnerable-looking, like a lost and hungry boy. Tally never mentioned this fact, of course, or Zane would probably have gotten Serge to fix it. She made her way to the coffee maker, stepping over the piles of unrecycled clothes and dirty dishes that occupied every square centimeter of floor. As always, Zane's room was a wreck. His closet lay half open, too overflowing to shut properly. It was an easy room to hide things in. Sipping her coffee, Tally told the hole in the wall to make their usual skating ensembles. Heavy plastic jackets lined with fake rabbit fur, knee-padded pants for bad falls, black scarves, and, most important, thick gloves that reached halfway to their elbows. While the hole was spitting out clothes, she took Zane his coffee, which finally dragged him to consciousness. Zane and Tally skipped breakfast, a meal they hadn't eaten for the last month, and layered up in the elevator down to the front door of Pulcher Mansion, speaking fluent pretty along the way.
"Did you see the frost, Zane-la? So icy-making.
Winter is totally bubbly."
"Totally. Summer is just too, I don't know, warming or something."
"Utterly."
They smiled pleasantly at the doorminder and went out into the cold, pausing for a moment on the mansion's front steps. Tally handed Zane her coffee mug and pulled her gloves up inside her sleeves, covering the interface cuff on her left arm with two layers. Then she wrapped that arm with the black scarf to seal the cuff tightly. She took both coffees from Zane, watching steam curl up from the trembling black pools, while he did the same with his own gloves. When he was done, Tally spoke, not too loudly.
"I thought we were supposed to act normal today."
"I am acting normal."
"Come on, bubbly is bogus?"
"What, too much?"
She shook her head, giggled, and pulled him toward the floating rink.
It had been 1 month since they'd taken the pills, and Tally and Zane weren't brain dead yet. The first few hours, though, had been totally bogus. The specials had searched them and Valentino 317 madly, putting everything they found in little plastic bags. They'd barked a million questions in their grating special voices, trying to find out why a pair of new pretties would climb the transmission tower. Tally tried to tell them they'd just wanted privacy, but no explanation satisfied the specials. Finally, some wardens showed up with the abandoned interface rings, med spray for Tally's palms, and muffins. Tally ate her long-delayed breakfast like a hungry dog, until all her bubbliness went away, then smiled prettily and asked to be taken to Serge for the previous night's scar. After another really boring hour or so, the specials let the wardens take her to the hospital with Zane in tow. That was mostly it, except for the interface cuffs. The doctors slipped Tally's on during her eyebrow surge, and Zane awoke the next morning to find himself wearing one. They worked just like interface rings, except they could send voice pings from anywhere, like a handphone. That meant the cuffs heard you talking even when you went outside, and, unlike rings, they didn't come off.
They were manacles with an invisible chain, and no tool Tally and Zane had yet tried could cut them open. Unexpectedly, the cuffs also became the fashion item of the season. Once the other Krim saw them, it was all Zane could do to keep everyone from requisitioning their own. He got the hole in the wall to make a bunch of non-working copies and pass them out. Over the next few weeks, word spread that the cuffs were some new marker of criminality, signifying that you had scaled the transmission tower on top of Valentino Mansion. It turned out that hundreds of new pretties had witnessed Tally's and Zane's climb, pinging one another to run to windows and check out the show. Within a few weeks, only the most fashion missing went around without some kind of metal cuff locked onto their wrists, and minders had to be installed to keep new pretties off the tower. People were starting to point out Tally and Zane when they were in public, and there were more Krim wannabes every day. It was like everybody wanted to be bubbly. Tally was nervous about the breakthrough, but she and Zane didn't say much on the way to the skating rink. Although their cuffs couldn't hear anything while wrapped up in their heavy winter gear, silence was a habit that had begun to follow them everywhere. Tally had grown used to communicating in other ways, winks and rolled eyes and silently mouthed words. Living in an unspoken conspiracy filled every gesture with significance, charged every shared touch with unspoken meaning. Inside the glass elevator that carried them up to the floating sheet of ice, looking down on the great bowl of Nefertiti Stadium, Zane took Tally's hand. His eyes flashed, as they did before a sudden, unexpected trick, like a snowball ambush from the roof of Pulcher Mansion. His playful glance was perfectly timed to settle Tally's nerves a little. It wouldn't do for the other Krims to see her anxious, after all. Most of them were already there, trading in boots for ice skates, finding bungee jackets in the right size. A few newly voted in Krims were warming up, looking wobbly-ankled on the floating ice, the sound of their skates like a library minder telling you to shush. Shay glided over to Tally in a hug, coming to a halt mostly by bumping into her. "Hey, skinny wa." "Hey, squint la," Tally retorted, giggling. Ugly nicknames were back in fashion, but Shay and Tally had switched their old names now that Tally was losing weight. Going food missing sucked, but sooner or later, she hoped to be thin enough to slip the cuff from her wrist. She saw that Shay had wrapped a black scarf around her forearm in solidarity. Shay also sported a version of Tally's flash tattoo, a nest of snakes coiling around one brow and down her cheek. A lot of the Krims had new facial tattoos with the heart rate triggers. You could see at a glance how bubbly they were. Self-heated coffee mugs sent clouds of steam into the air above the pack of Krims, and everyone's tattoos were spinning. A chorus of hellos rose up as Tally and Zane were spotted, excitement rising in the pack. Paris glided over with a bungee jacket and Tally's usual skates in hand. "Thanks, Nose," Tally said, kicking her boots off and sitting down on the ice. Here at the rink, hover skates weren't allowed. Real metal blades glittered in the wintry light like daggers. Tally drew her laces up tight. "Got your flask?" she asked Paris. He pulled it out. "Double vodka." "Very thawing." Tally and Zane had stopped drinking alcohol, which turned out to make you more pretty-minded than bubbly, but strong spirits had other uses here on the ice. She held out her gloved hands, and Paris pulled her up, her momentum sending the two of them into a slippery little waltz. Gliding, they steadied themselves against each other. "Don't forget your jacket, skinny," he said. She took it from him and tied the straps. "That would be bogus, wouldn't it?" Paris nodded nervously. "Any word from our friends across the river?" she asked, her voice dropping to just above a whisper. "Not a ping. They're still totally missing." Tally frowned. Croy's visit was a month ago now, and the new Smokies hadn't shown themselves since. The silence was ominous, unless this was another of their annoying tests. Either way, she was itching to go looking, once she got the stupid cuff off. How's Fausto going on tricking that hoverboard? Paris only shrugged, looking distractedly at the other Crims, who were invading the rink, laughing and screaming, slashing through the little Zambonis that skittered about polishing the ice. Tally checked the flash tattoo on Paris's forehead, a third eye that blinked with his heartbeat, and looked into his gorgeous eyes, brown and soft and depthless. Paris seemed bubblier than he had a month ago. All the Crims did. But Tally no longer saw improvement in him from day to day. It was so much harder for the rest of them who hadn't had the pills, who weren't half-cured like Tally and Zane. They could get excited in the short term, but it was hard to keep them focused. Well, the breakthrough would give them a jolt. It's okay, Nose. Let's skate. Tally pushed off against the flat of one blade, building up speed as she swept around the rink's outer edge. She looked down through the mottled window of ice underfoot. The hover lifters that held the floating rink up in the air were easy to see, spaced in a grid a few meters apart, and sending out a sunburst of refrigeration tendrils. Much farther below, the broad oval of the sports stadium was visible, softly out of focus, like the world through a pretty-minded haze. The stadium lights were coming on, warming up for the soccer game scheduled in 45 minutes. As always, there would be fireworks before it started, once the crowd was in their seats. Very pretty-making. The sky above was an uninterrupted expanse of blue, except for a few hot air balloons tethered to the tallest party spires. When it was airborne, the skating rink was the highest thing in New Pretty Town. Tally could glimpse the entire city spread out below. She skated after Zane, catching him as he rounded a turn. Everybody seemed bubbly to you? Mostly nervous. He gracefully reversed, skating backward as easily as breathing. His Operation Augmented muscles had been freed from pretty timidity and sloth. He could hold a handstand without trembling, climb up to his window in Pulcher Mansion in seconds, and outrun the monorail that brought Crumblies from the burbs into the central hospital. He never broke a sweat, and could hold his breath for 2 solid minutes. Watching him perform these feats, Tally remembered the rangers who'd rescued her from a brush fire on her journey to the smoke. Zane was as physically confident as they had been, fast and strong, but without the twitching inhumanity of special circumstances agents. Tally was no slouch herself, but somehow the cure had taken Zane's strength and coordination to a new level. She loved gliding across the ice with him, skating circles around the others, being the graceful center of the Crim's motley vortex of flashing blades. "Anything from the new smoke?" he asked, barely audible over the swoosh of skates. "Paris says nothing." Zane swore and took a tight turn, spraying ice on a non-Crim struggling slowly at the side of the rink. Tally caught up to him. "We have to be patient, Zane. We'll get these things off." "I'm tired of being patient, Tally." He looked down through the ice. The stadium below was teeming, the growing audience awaiting the first game of the inner-city playoffs. "How long?" "Any minute now," she said. As the words left her mouth, the first fireworks exploded below, instantly transforming the rink into a mottled palette of reds and blues. A second later, a tardy boom shuddered up through the ice, followed by a long, of appreciation from the crowd. "Here we go," Zane said with a grin, his irritation eased. Tally squeezed his hand and then let him skate away, gliding to a halt in the center of the rink, the farthest point from the supporting hover structure around the ice. She raised one hand and waited as the other Crims gathered in a tight pack around her. "Flasks," she said softly, and heard the whisper spread through the pack. Flashes of metal caught the sun, and Tally heard the rasp of tops being unscrewed. Her heart was beating fast, her senses sharpened by anticipation. Everyone's tattoos were totally spinning. She saw Zane gathering speed along the outside of the rink. "Poor," she said softly. A liquid sound spread through the pack of Crims. Double vodka and straight ethyl alcohol gurgling out. Tally thought she heard a creak. The slightest of complaints from the ice as its freezing point was lowered by the spirits. Even in the old days, Zane had always dreamed of pulling something like this, sometimes pouring champagne on the ice while the Crim skated. But the cure had made him serious. He'd even run a test in the small fridge in his room. He'd filled a tray of ice cubes, each one with a slightly different mix of vodka and water, and stuck it in the freezer. The all-water cube had frozen normally, but those with more alcohol in them got slushier and slushier, leaving the final all-vodka cube completely liquid. Tally looked down at the layer of spirits slowly spreading across the ice through their skates, melting away the marks of blades and falls. The stadium came into heart-pounding focus until Tally could see every detail of a rising plume of green and yellow fireworks. When the thunderous boom reached her ears, another ominous creak sounded. The fireworks display was building in intensity, ramping up for the finale. Tally raised her hand for Zane. He ran to the next turn, then headed toward them, skating hard. She felt a shimmer of panic in the pack around her, like a herd of gazelles spotting some big cat in the distance. A few Crims took last slugs from their flasks, then squirted boxes of orange juice into them to erase the evidence of what they'd done. Tally grinned, imagining the pretty befuddlement she would put on for the wardens. "We were all just standing there talking and minding our own business, not even skating, and suddenly..." "Watch out!" Zane cried, and the pack split in half, opening to create a path for him. He skated into its center and jumped into the air inhumanly high, eyes and blades flashing, then brought his skates down hard onto the ice, all his weight behind them. Zane instantly disappeared from view with a noise like breaking glass, and Tally heard the crack spreading with a sound that built like the shriek of a falling tree out in the smoke. For a strange split second, she was pushed up into the air as a large plate of ice teeter-tottered on the fulcrum of a lifter, but then it snapped in half, and Tally was falling, her stomach lurching up into her throat. Gloved hands grabbed her coat from every direction in a movement of group panic. Then a whoop rose up as the middle of the rink gave way altogether. Icy shards and Crims and Zambonis all tumbling down toward the green grass of the soccer field, 10,000 faces staring up at them in shock. Now this was bubbly. Bounce. For a moment, it was quiet. All around her, shattered ice fell without a sound, catching the stadium lights as it spun. Wind tore the war cries from the Crims' mouths. The crowd below looked up in stunned silence. Tally spread her arms to slow her fall, clutching all the precious seconds with cupped fingers. This part of a bungee jump was always like flying. Then a burst of light and sound sent Tally spinning, ears pummeled and eyes forced shut by blinding streaks of brilliance. After a few stunned seconds, she shook her head and opened her eyes. Rainbow shards of fire traveled away in every direction, as if Tally were at the center of an exploding galaxy. More booms thundered above her, unleashing a steady rain of incandescence. She realized what had happened. The grand finale of the fireworks show had detonated just as the pack of falling Crims had broken through the ice. The timing of the breakthrough had been a little too perfect. One sizzling flare clung to her bungee jacket, burning with the cool insistence of safety fireworks, tickling her face with cast-off sparks. Tally flailed her arms to right herself, but the ground was already rushing up, only seconds away. She was still out of control when the straps of the bungee jacket bit into her, bringing her headfirst plummet to a halt a few meters from the ground. As the jacket yanked Tally upright and back into the air, she rolled into a ball in case anything big was still falling. The possibility of one of them catching a chunk of ice or a tumbling Zamboni had always been there in the nervous-making part of this plan. But Tally made the bounce unscathed, and as she reached its apex, she heard the "ah" of the crowd's vast confusion. They knew something had gone wrong. She and Zane had thought about hacking the scoreboard to show a message at this moment, to penetrate the crowd's pretty haze while their heads were spinning. But then the wardens would know the breakthrough had been planned, which would lead to all sorts of bogus complications. The new Smokies would hear about this trick one way or another, and they, at least, would know what it meant. The cure had worked. The new smoke had allies inside the city. The sky was falling. Tally's hover bouncing came to a stop about midfield, on grass littered with broken ice, shuddering Zambonis, giggling Crims, and the few innocent skaters who'd fallen through, no doubt suddenly glad that bungee jackets were required in the rink. She looked around for Zane, and saw that his momentum had carried him down the field into one of the goals. She ran toward that end, checking on Crims along the way. Everyone's tattoos were pulsing madly, spinning with the anti-pretty magic of the breakthrough. But nobody was hurt beyond a few bruises or a little singed hair. "It worked, Tally," Fausto said softly as she passed, staring with amazement at a chunk of ice in his hand. She kept running. Zane was laughing hysterically, tangled up in the net. When he saw Tally, he cried out a long, "Goal!" She thudded to a halt, relieved, and let herself enjoy the bubbliness of everything. The world transformed around her. It was as if she could take in the whole audience at a glance, every expression crystal clear in the unreal sharpness of the stadium lights. 10,000 faces stared back at her, awestruck and amazed. Tally imagined herself making a speech right now, telling them all about the operation, the lesions, the terrible price of being pretty, that lovely meant brainless, and that their easy lives were empty. The bedazzled crowd looked as if they would listen. She and Zane had wanted to signal the new Smokies, but that hadn't been the only goal of the breakthrough. A trick on this scale would jazz up the Crims for a few days, they knew. But would a truly bubbly experience permanently change pretties who hadn't taken the pills? From the look in Fausto's eyes, Tally thought it might. And now, seeing the faces of the crowd, new and middle pretties, and even crumblies all head-spinning together, she wondered if the falling sky had awakened something larger. The city had definitely noticed. Wardens were streaming onto the field, first aid kits in hand. Tally had never seen such panicked expressions on middle pretties. Like the crowd, they all looked stunned that anything could have gone so totally wrong here in the city. The hover cameras that had been ready to record the playoff game were panning across the field, taking in the wreckage. By the end of the day, Tally realized, this trick would be broadcast in every city on the globe. She took a deep breath. It felt like setting off her first firework as a littlie, amazed that one little press of a button could make so much noise, wondering if she was going to get in trouble. As her euphoria wore off, Tally couldn't shake the feeling that, no matter how carefully they had covered up the trick, someone was going to know the breakthrough had been planned. Suddenly, Tally needed Zane's touch, his silent reassurance, and she ran the rest of the distance to the goal. He was being untangled from the torn net, a pair of wardens treating his face with med spray. Tally pushed them aside and took Zane into her arms. There were wardens everywhere, so she spoke in pretty. "Bubbly making, huh?" "Utterly," he said. Zane didn't have any flash tattoos, but Tally could feel his heart pounding through the heavy winter coat. "Are you broken anywhere?" "No, just ouching." He touched one side of his face gingerly. It bore red lines in the pattern of the net. "Looks like we scored." She giggled and kissed his wounded cheek as softly as she could, then brought her lips to his ear. "It worked. It really worked. It's like we can do anything."
"We can."
"After this, the new Smokies have to know the cure works. They'll send us more pills, and we can change everything." He pulled away and nodded, then leaned closer to kiss her ear softly and murmur,
"And if they don't notice this, we'll just have to go out looking for them."
Party crash. That night was all about champagne. Although they'd sworn off drinking, Tally and Zane felt as if they had to toast the Crim's survival of the great collapse of Nefertiti Stadium. They had all practiced for tonight, every reaction rehearsed, so there was no mention of spirits poured onto the ice, no gloating about a plan that had worked perfectly, just the excited chatter of new pretties recovering from a bubbly and unexpected departure from the norm. Everyone told and retold the story of their own fall, the shudder of cracking ice, the dazzling interior of the fireworks display, the yank of bungee jackets, and, after it was all over, alarmed calls from crumbly parents who had seen the whole thing replayed again and again on every channel. Most of the Crims had been interviewed for the feeds, telling their stories with expressions of innocent surprise. The newsfeed story was spreading and mutating. Calls for resignations from the city architecture board, a total rescheduling of the soccer playoffs, and the closure of the floating rink forever. A bogus side effect that Tally hadn't anticipated. But it didn't take long for the feeds to get repetitious. Even your own face on a wall screen was boring after you'd seen it 50 times. So Zane led them outside to build a bonfire in Denzel Park. The Crim stayed bubbly, their flash tattoos spinning in the firelight as they retold their stories. They were all speaking fluent pretty in case anyone was listening, but Tally heard more than vapid nonsense in their words. It was like the way she and Zane spoke to each other, always aware of the cuffs, but loading their pretty talk with meaning. The silent conspiracy that they had shared was growing beyond the two of them. As Tally stared into the flames, listening to the Crims around her, she began to believe that the bubbly-making excitement of the breakthrough really would stick. Maybe people could think their way out of being pretty-minded. No pills required.
"Better drink that champagne, Skinny," Zane said. "I hear that alcohol evaporates totally quickly."
"Evaporates? That's terrible." Tally made a serious face and held her champagne up to the firelight. The news was giving hourly updates on the breakthrough investigation. A bunch of engineers were trying to figure out how 20 centimeters of lifter-supported ice could have buckled under the weight of a few dozen people. Blame had been assigned to shockwaves from the fireworks now, heat from the stadium lights, even sympathetic vibration from skaters moving in tandem like marching soldiers. But none of the experts had guessed that the real reason for the breakthrough had evaporated into thin air. She raised her glass, clinking it against Zane's. He drained his glass, then took hers, splashing some champagne into his.
"Thanks, Skinny," he said.
"For what?"
"For sharing."
She gave him a pretty smile. He meant the pills they'd split, of course, not the champagne.
"Anytime. I'm glad there was enough for two.
Bubbly luck how it worked out." She nodded. The cure hadn't been perfect, but considering they'd each only had half a dose, the test had been a success. The cure had affected Zane almost instantly, shattering his pretty-mindedness in a few days. Tally's pill had worked more slowly, and she still woke up fuzzy most mornings, needing Zane to remind her to think bubbly thoughts. The good part was, she never got Zane's awful headaches.
"It's better shared, I think," Tally said, clinking his glass again.
She remembered the warning in the letter from herself, and shivered despite the fire. Maybe two pills was actually too much, and if Tally had taken both, she would have been brain dead by now. Zane pulled her closer.
"Like I said, thanks."
He kissed her, his lips warm in the cold night air, eyes flickering with bonfire reflections, and held his mouth to hers for a long time. Between the oxygen-missing kiss and the champagne, Tally felt herself getting pretty-minded, the edges of the firelit party turning fuzzy, which maybe wasn't always a bad thing.
Zane finally let her go and turned toward the bonfire, nuzzling her ear to whisper,
"We have to get these things off."
"Shh." Even with winter coats and gloves covering their cuffs, Tally felt a little too famous for the moment to make plans out loud. The Crims had already thrown rocks to drive away one hover camera covering the party for some follow-up story on the rink collapse.
"It's driving me crazy, Tally."
"Don't worry. We'll figure it out."
"Just stop talking," she pleaded silently.
Zane kicked a fallen branch into the bonfire. As it burst into flame, he let out a pained sound.
"Zane?"
He shook his head, fingers at his temples. Tally swallowed. Another headache. Sometimes they ended after a few seconds. Sometimes they lasted for hours.
"No, I'm okay."
He sucked in a deep breath.
"You know, you could go to a doctor," she whispered.
"Forget that. They'll know I'm cured." She pulled him closer to the crackle of the fire and pressed her lips to his ear.
"I told you about Maddie and Az, David's parents. They were doctors, surgeons, and for a long time, even they didn't know about the brain lesions. They just thought most people were stupid. A regular doctor won't think there's anything wrong with fixing you."
Zane shook his head furiously and turned to whisper in her ear,
"It won't stop with a regular doctor, Tally. New pretties don't get sick."
She looked around the fire at the glowing faces. The Crims wound up at the hospital often enough, but only for injuries, not illness. The operation boosted your immune system, strengthened your organs, fixed your teeth forever. An unhealthy new pretty was such a rarity, there would probably be a ton of tests. And if Zane's headaches persisted, the test results would be passed on to experts.
"They're keeping an eye on us already," he whispered. "We can't afford anyone poking around inside my head."
He flinched again, pain contorting his features.
"We should go home," she said softly.
"You stay. I can make it to Poulter okay." She groaned and pulled him away from the fire.
"Come on."
He let her lead him into the darkness, circling around the other Crims. Shay called out to them, but Tally waved her away, saying, "Too much champagne." Shay smiled sympathetically and turned back to the fire. They trudged home, the bare ground glistening with frost in the moonlight. The night was beautiful, but Tally could only wonder about what was happening inside Zane's head. Was it just a minor side effect of the cure, or a sign of something gone terribly wrong?
"Don't worry, Zane," she said, just above a whisper. "We'll figure this out. Or we'll get out of here and get help from the Smokies. This is Maddie's cure. She'll know what's going on."
He didn't answer, just stumbled up the hill beside her. When Poulter Mansion came into view, Zane pulled her to a halt.
"Go back to the party. I can make it home okay from here."
His voice was too loud. She looked around, but they were alone. No pretties or hover cams in sight.
"I'm worried about you," she whispered.
He lowered his voice.
"It's silly to worry, Skinny. It's just a headache. Same thing as always. Probably because I was pretty longer than you."
He forced a smile. "It's just taking me longer to get used to having a brain again."
"Come on, let's get you in bed."
"No, you go back. I don't want them to know about this."
"I won't say anything," Tally whispered.
They had told no one about the cure, not until they absolutely trusted that the other Crims were bubbly enough to keep their mouths shut.
"I'll just say you drank too much."
"Fine, but go back to the party," he said firmly. "You have to keep them bubbly. Make sure they don't get drunk and start saying stupid things."
Tally looked back at the fire, just visible through the trees below. With enough champagne, someone might start bragging. She looked back at Zane.
"You'll be okay?"
He nodded.
"Better already."
She took a breath of the cold air. He didn't look any better.
"Zane..."
"Listen, I'll be fine. And no matter what happens, I'm glad we took the pills.
Tally took a deep breath to steady herself.
What do you mean, no matter what happens? I don't mean tonight, just whenever, you know.
Tally looked into his gold-flecked eyes and saw the pain he was silently carrying. Whatever was happening to Zane, staying bubbly wasn't worth losing him.
She shook her head.
No, I don't know.
He sighed. I guess that was a stupid way to put it. I'm fine.
I'm worried about you.
Just go back to the party.
Tally sighed softly. There was no point in arguing. She held up one arm, indicating the scarf wrapped around her wrist.
Okay, but if you feel worse, ping me.
He smiled bitterly. At least those things are good for something. She kissed him softly, then watched him trudge up to the door of the mansion and inside. On the lonely trip back down to the party, the air seemed to grow colder. Tally almost wished she could be pretty-minded again, just for one night, instead of having to keep watch on the Crims. From the very first kiss, being with Zane had made things complicated. She sighed. Maybe that was the way it always worked. Zane would never go to a doctor, Tally knew. If his headaches turned into something worse, could she make him go? Of course, Zane was right. Any doctor who could fix his problem could probably figure out what had caused it. And that was someone who could make Zane pretty-minded again. If only Croy hadn't disappeared. Tally wondered how long it would take for the new Smokies to get in touch with them now. After the breakthrough, they had to realize the cure had worked. Even if wherever they were hiding didn't have news feeds, every ugly in the world would be chattering about the rink collapse, talking about Tally Youngblood, looking innocent on their wall screens. Of course, she and Zane still had to escape the city. Tally had no idea how to get the cuffs off. As they grew thinner, it seemed like the rings of steel were closer to coming off. But how long was it going to take? Tally didn't much like being in a race between her own starvation and Zane's brain melting.